Thanks, and thanks for sticking around. I thought it was just going to be me and Larry Rowden and Joe Kimmel, but glad a few of you stuck around. I'm at the West Central Research and Extension Center, which on this map is where the North and South Platte Rivers come together. The stars on this map are locations where we have beef cattle research being conducted within our university system. GSL up here, Goodmanson Sandhills Lab, is our largest cow herd, about 700 cows. A lot of the work I'm going to talk about has been generated there. So the Goodmanson Sandhills Lab is in three counties. The northern county is the largest cow-calf county in the United States. Cherry County, more cows than any other county in the United States. And a mixture of upland stabilized sand dunes and meadows that we do harvest some forage off of, even when it doesn't rain because they're sub-irrigated. We do a lot of work in our university system on beef systems research, looking at management practices that are trying to help producers be more profitable, but not just the immediate consequences of that decision, but how does that affect the entire system, going to those calves, even to slaughter. A lot of what I talk about it generally at these conferences is on fetal programming, but today they asked me to talk about another part of this system because of the increasing cow herd or potential to increase the cow herd is on heifer development systems. This slide ought to concern us all. I know we're all happy with $3 calf prices and $1,500. I'm going to pay $1,500 for some heifers this fall. I mean, that's $500 more than I paid last year. The top bar is cattle output, the amount of beef supply. It's not updated, so we saw a decline in beef supply this year. And I talked to Jim Robb about this with LMIC, and he said this sustaining beef production with a declining cow herd is largely being solved by cull cows that we killed because of the drought. But I tell all of us, and I think we're all aware, this trend is not sustainable. I mean, you guys south of here closed a packing plant that killed 20% of the cattle in Texas. We closed plants in California and Milwaukee. There's a lot of empty feedlots in Texas as well. So I think these trends are challenging the infrastructure of the beef industry. A few years ago, we formed a group, a task force, if you will, to talk about challenges and opportunities with the heifer enterprise. And we invited some of the bigger ranches across the United States, and we asked ourselves, what's going to draw these people? So Tom Brink, when he worked for JBS before he left, I called him and I said, would you host a meeting for us? And he said, yeah. I said, we just had an advisory meeting talking about this very thing. We're very concerned about where our cattle are going to come from. For those of you who aren't aware, which I think most of you are, JBS is the largest cattle feeder in the United States. There's 970,000 head of cattle on feed. They feed 2 million bushels of corn every week and buy 35,000 feeder calves every week. If you think they're not concerned about where their cattle are going to come from, as well as all the other feeders in the United States. We went to the Cooner Yard outside of Kersey, totally rebuilt yard, 97,000 head of cattle from all over this United States and Canada and Mexico. Tom talked about 10 good reasons to expose more heifers during the next few years, and then he had two notes of caution, and that was largely the drought. The drought that occurred down here, the drought that moved up north. And he said it's a great time to own cows if you have the competitive cost structure and the right genetics and management to compete in today's marketplace. Another effort that came out of this was an effort we invited Drovers, Beef Magazine, Progressive Cattlemen, a website that you may all want to look at. It's called morecowsnow.com. And they asked me to serve on an advisory board. And we met in Nashville at NCBA, not last year, but 3 years ago. And everything we talked about was heifer retention. And I guess when we left that meeting, I said it can't just be about heifer retention. And hopefully today you all learned about the most important factor in beef production, and it's reproduction, right? And generally, I talk about ways to, that hopefully the other speakers you got from, ways to improve not only overall reproduction, but when animals become pregnant has a huge impact on the amount of beef that we produce off any ranch. But like I said, today I'm charged with heifer development. Last week, I wasn't in this country, as Hazy mentioned. Heifer development systems around the world are largely forage-based. And this is where I was last week. And this system here is all forage-based. A lot of cattle, different country. We tend to be one of the few countries that lock up a lot of our females to develop them. Our country, the largest cow herd in the United States, which is where 45,000 head of cows stand south of Orlando, Florida. Very forage-based system. Other things that stand in this great, if you look in the middle of the screen, that was a little unnerving, but made it out alive. Ben Tibbetts is here, and he tells me they're not that big a deal, but I beg to differ. So if we focus on, you know, there's two ways to increase beef supply. One is with heifer retention, which is kind of a long process, right? The other is with reproductive management techniques and tools that hopefully was discussed in this seminars thus far that will help you get more animals pregnant and get more animals pregnant early. Some of our heifers at the Goodmanson Ranch, they're a composite Red Angus Simmental. I'm glad to hear crossbreeding isn't totally dead and can solve a lot of the problems that were discussed in the previous session. Before we talk about development, let's talk a little bit about selection. This is from Jim Gosi, who's a famous animal breeder. He says, cull the daughters of bad mark cows, and who are they? Cows that need help calving, that calve late, that fail to wean a calf, that have problems nursing, that wean a lightweight calf, and have attitude problems. And beyond that, he says, cull the lightweight, big birth, big frame cattle, cull the youngest, and select daughters of the oldest cows. How many agree with that? I asked him, I said, Jim, I said, isn't our best genetics in our youngest females? He said, prove it. He said, that cow that calves early every year and has a heifer calf for you to choose has proven she can exist in your environment and probably is a better selection tool than anything else that we have. And I would argue Spangler had his formula up about the amount of variation that some of our genetic tools account for, much less the heritability of those tools. He missed one very important thing. What percent of the genetic contribution comes from any one female? You multiply his 5% by whatever number that is, and it's less than 1%. He said optimum, not maximum preg rates, and I'll totally agree with that. And then maybe some functionality things. Cattle that can eat some poor quality feed. Our beef industry largely exists in areas that aren't in competition with other industries. It's going to be in the sand hills in Nebraska, because it can't grow corn. It's going to be in Florida, because it largely can't be used for other resources. It's not going to be in Iowa again. Those farm ground that was taken out, or those pastures that were taken out for $8 corn aren't coming back. He mentioned selecting females that are born early. This is just a data set from some of our heifers looking at the period in which the heifer calf was born and how it impacted clear through her second calf. Those calves born in the first cycle, heavier at weaning, heavier at breeding, they have higher preg rate, and they have more calves born in the first 21 days, and they breed back sooner. Bob Cushman, and you all saw this slide in George Perry's talk, he said, well, that doesn't explain all the variation. All the variation of when a female becomes pregnant is not explained by her age. Okay, I admit that. And so he took their data set and looked at it differently based on when they conceived the first time. And if you look at the top line, those are the heifers that conceived their first time in their first 21 days. And they had greater longevity, and they weaned a heavier calf out to their sixth calf. Out to their sixth calf collectively, and those other second and third cycle heifers still got pregnant, but they got pregnant later. They weaned 400 more pounds of calf on the same resources. And until I have better genetic tools than I have today, maybe this is the system that I want to use. Expose all the females for a short period of time, but keep the ones that get pregnant early. That's the number one indicator that I can find on longevity, on productivity of a cow, is when she conceives the first time. Harlan Hughes said, it takes a profit from two early calving cows to cover the loss from one late calving. A cow that calves in her first cycle, her entire life will produce you 1.5 to 2 more calves. And guess what? It's on the same resources. The old IRM data tried to look at indicators on ranches that showed more profitable ranches, ranches characteristics that made them more profitable. It wasn't output. It wasn't weaning weight. It wasn't yearling weight. It wasn't carcass weight. It largely wasn't cow size. It had some to do with inputs. But the number one indicator of profitability on a ranch was those ranches that had a high percent of calves born early in their calving season. So, on to heifer development. Some of the older work said that we need to have heifers at 2/3 of mature weight, or we're going to have dystocia problems, we're going to have trouble getting those calves or heifers bred back, we're going to have more death loss. Those calves were weaned in the fall of 1964. And largely, this has gone uncontested. But even if you have to have a greater target weight than I'm hopefully going to convince you you need, all you need to do is do a little bit of math, and this can save you a heck of a lot of money. We got genetics today. We're easily weaning 500-pound heifer calves. We're not breeding them till May and June. We got a long time. Just do the math. A heifer never has to gain more than 1.5 pounds a day, even to get to a target weight that you don't need to be at, I will argue. So we looked at pattern of gain for several years. How do we get to that magical target weight? Three different patterns of gain, and Don Clanton was at North Platte for years, found no difference in age at puberty, conception rate, or calf performance in either of those systems. Some work out of Kansas, the even gain, which is the red line versus the blue line, the late gain, having a low input and then moving up into breeding. They did it with 12% less feed, but more importantly, those heifers that were on a lower gain and then moved up right before breeding had greater first service conception rate. Look at the difference there by cycling those nutrients. And some work out of Mark at Clay Center showed that the heifers on the low high, like that previous slide, if you look at 5 years of age, there were more heifers still in the herd based on how they were developed initially as a heifer calf. Which tells me what? That low means they were either restricted feed, quality, or quantity. And they were, in this case, restricted quality, which is all of our work does. We don't restrict quantity of feed. But instead, as an industry, we largely take the attitude of locking heifers up and feed them corn silage and alfalfa hay and distiller's grains and get them all pregnant and then say, oh, by the way, you're never going to see that again. Doesn't make much sense. But a word of caution from some of Cliff Lamb's work. He, when he was in Minnesota, he made heifers either condition score 7 or 5, restricted them till they quit cycling, and then refed them to see when they'd start cycling again. Those fat heifers had to get a full condition score greater to start cycling than those that were maintained, which argues, can we program heifers to be dependent on a certain amount of fatness to ever breed again? And there are hormones and fat cells, i.e. leptin for one, that would indicate that may be the case. So some work at initial work at Goodmanson challenged this. We went to 53 or 58% of mature weight, and just going to show you the preg data, no difference. And what is this? This is a 1,200-pound cow. So we're breeding heifers at just something over 600 pounds. No difference and out to their fourth pregnancy diagnosis, no difference in calf productivity. We didn't affect anything other than what it cost us to develop heifers. We challenged that even more, but we had a longer breeding season, 50% of mature weight. So we're right at 600 pounds going into breeding. We gave them 60 days to get pregnant, no difference in conception rate, but we had a little bit later calving date, which, if you believe the Miles City data, older data, breeding heifers on puberal esters, which may have been the case with these lighter heifers, was less fertile. So we gave them a longer period to get pregnant, and it took them a little bit longer. But in that 60-day window, we had similar overall preg rate. One other interesting thing, out to about the fifth pregnancy diagnosis, those lighter heifers are still lighter as cows. And I'll show you some data. They also are more efficient, at least as bred heifers. Here's that Miles City data. First estrus, third estrus, difference in pregnancy rate, and then if you put an embryo in a heifer that only cycled once or three times, difference there. Go back and look at that paper. There's like less than 70 heifers in this data set, and they bred those heifers on their first estrus at 50 days younger. 50 days younger. We've looked at our data in these more, in our heifers today, in two different genotypes, and we're largely seeing if a heifer cycled once, fertility is not improved in multiple cycles. Another tool that we have, and y'all heard, you got to put semen in a female, either natural service or AI, but you can get some of the advantages, many of the advantages of synchronization with natural service. What we did here was we fed heifers for 14 days with MGA, turned the bulls in about a week before you would give prostaglandin. We did not give prostaglandin, and developed the heifers to 50% of mature weight. They were under 600 pounds when we determined if they were cycling, but look how many were cycling. 80% about, and 90% preg rate in 45 days. Did MGA help? It did not, because most of them were cycling. Our current work, those studies were done with known quantities and qualities of feedstuffs to get those gains, those target weights. Currently, we've been working with systems of development that we don't know how a heifer will respond. A system that we have a lot of in Nebraska, a huge competitive advantage in addition to the ethanol industry, we have a heck of a lot of corn. We have more corn to graze than we have cattle to graze it. A challenge becomes getting the farmers to let us graze it. That's a challenge. But we use a lot, there's thousands and thousands of cows in Nebraska separated by one hot wire. So our work was to look at, what if we look at our common winter systems, winter range, grazing, or corn residue, but look at it with our heifer calves. There's some of the heifer calves. I heard at this conference, I've heard nearly everywhere I've been around the country, that there's a lot of heifers bred that shouldn't be. Prove it. Should those heifers be bred? You going to select them for replacements? All of our females are potential replacements. This may be one reason why you don't adopt lighter heifer development systems. You don't want your neighbors to see those. They're not starved. Look at them. How do you like those heifers? How do you like those heifers? They're the same heifers. You know this thing called compensatory gain that the yearling industry has known about for a long time? Also works in heifers. Those heifers go to spring grass, they change. Here's another tool. We synchronize all of our females with natural service. We do some AI, but not in our heifers generally. We turn the bulls in, 5 days later, everything gets shot of prostaglandin. When I was at Fort Keogh in a 32-day breeding season, three different breeding herds, greater than 85% conception rate. Natural service. Those synchronized calves are older and heavier at weaning. We shortened our breeding season from 60 days to 45 days in 1 year, and they said we're going to hurt our preg rates. Did we? Didn't hurt them at all. We're in the mid-90s. And what do we do to calf productivity? Those calves in that synchronized system with a more limited breeding season returned that one shot of prostaglandin and returned $35, and that several years ago market. It's probably at least twice that today. So back to the heifers. Them heifers on winter range, they were heavier at breeding than heifers on corn residue, which surprised me a little bit. I don't know if you have experience running cows on corn stalks, but which will cows do better on, corn residue or winter range? There's no corn left in those fields anymore. It ain't what it was. The BT corn is no darn good. Well, I've got data that shows cows will outperform on corn residue will outperform than on winter grass. Grazing corn stalks has never been about the corn left in the field. It's been about the fact that the plant breeders have got so efficient that they've been able to increase bushel yield. And you know what comes along with bushel yield of corn? More residue. We get no response to supplement cows on corn stalks, mature cows, none. Not even a change in weight. We do on heifer calves. But the heifer calves didn't gain as well. Why? We'll talk more about that. There weren't many cycling that come off stocks, less than 50%, 75 on winter range. Here's the gain over winter. Not much. Half a pound, less than that on corn residue. But then they went together in the same pasture at Goodmanson on grass, and look what they did. And then they went together in the same breeding pastures, and you look at the yellow bar, those heifers that were previously on stocks outgained the heifers that were on winter grass. Here's the weight before they went to corn residue as a bred heifer and just prior to calving. I do give some caution. These heifers in these lower input systems have to be able to exhibit that compensatory gain to have an acceptable pregnancy rate. And we'll talk at the very end about some of our later calving systems that might be a challenge, might be more of a challenge in some of these systems. So overall, we pregged our heifers last week, 85% pregnant. And I don't want more than that. We keep every female gets a chance to go into the cow herd, but she has to do it on a low input system, run like a yearling, short breeding season. These open heifers are worth what today? Unbelievable. A lot of people argue in the Sandhills that the yearling operation has been more profitable than the cow-calf operation over time, and that the Sandhills should be made for running yearlings. A lot of the cow-calf guys don't agree, but a lot of the cow-calf guys run yearlings, and a lot of the cow-calf guys run yearling heifers. The biggest feeding operation in Nebraska is 90% heifers. So I've been asked, well, what about if you're going to AI these and get them pregnant in a short period, and cattle that are potentially less fertile, straight bred cattle. I think at least two geneticists in the room will agree with me that crossbred cattle have higher fertility. So we purchase some straight bred, more straight Angus cattle every year. Here they're developed either in a dry lot or corn residue. By design, the heifers in the dry lot were over 100 pounds heavier at breeding. Less cycling on corn stalks. Here's the gain over winter, and the middle bars are the gain in the feedlot when we're synchronizing them with MGA, and they are eating the same diet. They're eating in the bunk the same diet, and look at the difference in gain, and maybe not surprisingly, those heifers, after we AI them, go to the same pasture, and look at the difference in gain of the heifers that were developed on corn residue. Here's the heifers before they went to stocks and prior to calving. If you look at the corn residue heifers, what did they do over winter? They gained a little bit. What did the heifers that were in a dry lot do? They lost weight based on how they were developed as a heifer calf. We've got, you know, great tools for synchronized. There's a huge argument of exposing these heifers, maybe just AIing them once, not even cleaning up bulls with them. Another thing that I don't think was pointed out relating to this, to the cedar and some of the cow protocols, I've used the cedar in a lot of later calving cows. This is a huge opportunity. There's two really huge opportunities in both the heifer enterprise, getting animals pregnant early, but also moving late calvers up. I had a ranch that put cedars in like 80 late calving cows, and when they're vet, and just pulled them in 7 days, gave prostaglandin, when their vet preg checked, they estimated they moved them cows up two cycles. And they use natural service, but you could certainly AI them. Similar synchronization rate, AI conception rate was acceptable, you know, 60-70%. We did it for a lot less money developing those heifers in on corn residue. Here's some other more recent data. Heifers on corn stalks, the lighter, 665, 727. One time AI preg rate. How many get that? That's what's possible. What's acceptable is to you. To the right, right? Those lighter heifers bred better. Why? Hopefully y'all caught it today that we always think about preparing a female to get to the time that we breed her, whether it's natural service or AI, and then we forget about her. There's the gain on corn residue. 0.9 pounds. We're not pushing those heifers hard in a lot. 1.5 pounds a day. And then we AI them together, and then they go to the same pasture and graze, and then I ultrasound them about 40 days after we AI them. Those heifers on stocks outgain the heifers that were on stocks, outgain the heifers in the dry lot by 1 pound a day. I think early embryonic mortality was mentioned. What that female is doing during establishment of a pregnancy is probably just as important, if not more important, for your overall pregnancy success. And I'll tell you, those heifers were grazing side by side in the same pasture, but based on how we developed them, they had that difference of gain. That difference of gain. Remember this compensatory gain. And they're more efficient as bred heifers. So, these extensive development systems have allowed us to lower development costs over $100. Selling these open heifers is not a liability. If you're ever going to have an open female on a beef cattle operation, it better be one that didn't get pregnant ever. And that's a heifer. We believe it allows us to determine adaptability early with a short breeding season, challenging those heifers with lighter breeding weights, results in at least lighter mature weight out to their fifth calf. And I do think this compensatory gain is important. Because when we look at our later calving heifers, and this is two overwinter systems to create a different weight at preg check, our preg rates are a full 20 to 30% lower than our springs. And the bottom part just shows the S is supplementing those heifers at the top during breeding. And yeah, we can get those preg rates up to similar as our spring calvers, but I would argue, do we want to? Maybe by making those heifers or only having those heifers that conceive under that limited resource environment, and it's not limited in quantity, it's quality going down later in the breeding season. Maybe we're selecting for females that we don't have to supplement the rest of their life in those breeding seasons. But I'll tell you, the mature cows are fine. They breed, we can get a running age cow pregnant any time. Spangler talked about this. What's the difference? He did not show a slide like this, but this is the genetic trend for scrotal circumference. And we don't have to debate whether it does influence time of puberty in heifers. He says it doesn't influence fertility, which I guess I can't argue. But. So with that, thank you for your attention. This is courtesy of John Young on the Rex Ranch, 896 heifers, first calf heifers from the heart of cattle country and the heart of sand hills. Thank you for your attention.